ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
I think China is going to do what it always does. Look what they've done in electric vehicles. They've basically come to dominate the global electric vehicle industry and the vehicle industry in general.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find us on ABC Listen.
Betting giants today found themselves in the hot seat at the Senate inquiry after a series of explosive allegations were aired by harm reduction advocates yesterday. The gambling companies called for further evidence on the allegations and called for any legislation to strike the right balance, as they frame it. But across the political spectrum, a push for Labor to strengthen legislation is continuing. So while the Albanese government is staring down the political pressure, for now, will their punt pay off, or will they be forced to give ground? Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm Claire Armstrong.
And Claire, great to have you back, because the Senate inquiry into Labor's gambling bill has continued today. Today, betting giants were in the hot seat: Tabcorp, Sportsbet, Responsible Wagering Australia. This follows what was really explosive allegations, I think we heard, from harm reduction advocates and those who've, you know, lived with this addiction and have pretty harrowing stories to share, including allegations that drugs, sex workers, and thousands of dollars of inducements were provided to keep gamblers punting. Claire, what have we heard today?
Yes. Well, after yesterday, I don't think anything we were going to hear today would be quite as exciting. But we have obviously just had Sportsbet and Tabcorp and Responsible Wagering Australia, which is sort of like the industry peak body, pushing back, rejecting the accusations that were made. Sportsbet, I think even yesterday, put out a statement saying that obviously they were very serious allegations and that if anyone had any information about that sort of thing going on, that they should provide it to the company so the company can investigate, essentially. So that sort of is as far as that issue goes. What we then got into with the betting companies in particular was quite a bit of back and forth about this idea of inducements, with the companies pushing back, suggesting that things like, you know, refer a mate, sign up bonuses, all those kinds of things are already restricted. And what they are really in the business of is what they prefer to call promotions. So this is things like, you know, deposit $1,000 into your account or up to $1,000 into your account and we'll match it with bonus bets worth 50% of that, or those kinds of promotional special offers targeted to if you're a known racing punter or you prefer to bet on the AFL or NRL, they will target you with sort of tailored promotions. The committee essentially ended up at a standstill with the people that you would expect, like Sarah Hanson-Young, David Pocock, but also Sarah Henderson, the Coalition's shadow communications minister, all sort of just saying that that whole concept is pretty unpalatable and bordering on unethical, particularly if it's targeting people that are identified as big spenders, aka also big losers to gambling. But beyond that, really what I have sort of observed watching this now for 2 days is an issue where the government, in an effort to quote-unquote get the balance right, which obviously people on all sides of this have very strong opinions about whether they have done so, has made this an incredibly complicated piece of legislation. And hearing from some of the other witnesses today representing Free TV, the regulator, when you're at a point of having to argue that different smart TVs have different operating systems, and therefore if you're designing a age verification opt-out system for gambling ads, you're going to have to design that across multiple different pieces of software to suit multiple different television brands. It was just unbelievably complicated for a piece of legislation the government is insisting is operational by January 1. I don't know, that's sort of my big takeaway without getting too far into the weeds, is that I think this has got a long way to run and it's going to be really messy.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, Sarah Henderson's positioning there. Obviously, we saw Sarah Hanson-Young, who's from the Greens, really, you know, hold press conferences, try to push the issues in it. This is only a couple of days, but it's about trying to frame where the legislation goes next, Claire, and I think that's the really interesting part because the government can't get this through without either the Greens, and the Greens don't look like they're playing ball to me with this legislation because they think it's a dog's breakfast and they don't think it goes far enough. Then there's the coalition, and the shenanigans inside the coalition I find quite interesting, right? Because there are very strong voices inside the coalition who think this is a signature issue that they can really take a stand on. But you mentioned Sarah Henderson, I think maybe a different tone from other people. I don't know. What's your view?
I think what I'm detecting from the line of questioning from Senator Henderson has been that she is more alive to some of the commercial concerns. She was quite interested in one of the examples provided by Free TV that there are a lot of carve-outs in this bill for horse racing because it obviously only exists for the purpose of gambling. But if you're Channel 9, say, who currently have the rights to broadcast the Melbourne Cup, you would be prevented from airing at a gambling advertising, but a dedicated racing channel wouldn't. So I think she's certainly alive to some of those complexities. The age verification thing Free TV have really pushed back on because their whole sort of model is to be as accessible as possible. And if people have to jump through hoops, we all know about the sort of fears that exist in the community around terms like digital ID or having to give your credit card up, detail up to verify information, that might preclude them from having access to, you know, the customers, the people that watch Free TV. She was definitely alive to some of that complexity, but I would also say very hardening and quite strong in having a clear view that there is a harm here that needs to be mitigated and is not necessarily being mitigated as well as it should be or could be in this bill. So she was definitely pursuing some of those kind of, as I said, this is a very complex bill, things. I think there isn't a way for this bill to get through the Senate without it being tougher and more restrictive of gambling promotions and advertisements. Clearly the inducements issue is where things are really focused, but I think there could be some other little bits around the ads. I think it is more likely that it'll go through with the coalition, but they will exact their pound of flesh on the way through.
Exact their pound of flesh. And that'll be the kind of political play here. But then there's some internal dynamics going on inside of Labor, especially after the Labor conference. Clearly the base of the Labor Party wants the government to do more, Claire. I mean, that was a big theme of the Labor conference. They ended up doing a more watered-down deal in terms of how they framed it in the platform. But that's got to be going on here too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I think, you know, you and I discussed this in Adelaide. Was that last week? Oh my gosh. No, the week before maybe. I'm losing track of time. The debate around an amendment of strengthening a national regulator was ultimately watered down as it landed in that platform. But one of the things I think maybe Labor will revisit in 3 years' time is a lot of the big policy fights were had and won behind closed doors, and the quote-unquote amendment was what was already in the draft platform, which was this acknowledgement that inducements to gamble are a problem, are a harm, and that more action is needed. So even though what we saw on the conference floor was quite muted, there had actually been some progress there behind the scenes where that unhappiness in the Labor caucus and in the broader membership around something like inducements, which have been described as being quite predatory, was actually addressed in the platform. I think it does make it so that the government will have to look at this issue. I'm not sure if this is the bill in which they do that, because this is obviously, you know, there's somewhat of a distinction between an ad and a promotion or an offer. I would imagine that it is Anthony Albanese's hope that this legislation, with a few concessions, passes, and that is the end of this issue insofar as he gets to have ushered in what are like undeniably stronger in general restrictions. But I don't think that that is going to be the case. I think, you know, when we're hearing examples of gambling ads playing between Disney songs on Spotify, you know, which is clearly going to be listened to by a child, most likely, no judgment. But I think when those kinds of examples continue to proliferate, this is going to be more drawn out for Labor than the Prime Minister would want.
And it was only a 2-day inquiry, Claire, right? But Wow, it's punched above its weight, hasn't it, in terms of impact? It's the week before Parliament returns. We've been on this long midwinter break for those who are just tuning in to politics now and are like, oh, what's happening in politics? It's a big midwinter break. The Prime Minister's on leave this week. So is Angus Taylor. Like, so the leaders aren't on, but this story has dominated. It really frames everything going back into that parliamentary sitting week, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And I think that, you know, maybe it being only 2 days rather than a longer kind of protracted roaming inquiry that hears from more people and maybe travels beyond Canberra may not have ended up having this impact because there's certainly, as far as it can be, this is probably a very nerdy thing to say. There's certainly an energy coming from the senators who are like aware they have 10 minutes to get in, get what they want and get out. It's been much more kind of impactful maybe because of that, even though obviously part of it being 2 days was because the government's on this timeline to get it all stitched up, pass through Parliament and ready to go for the new year.
I want to move on to another thing that we've been watching today, coalition frontbencher and future leadership hopeful. Andrew Hastie is facing a direct threat from One Nation. Everyone knows that. He's been taking them on. The minor party is expected to launch a branch in Andrew Hastie's WA electorate of Canning this week. They like really targeting him as well. I think it's part of a bit of psychological play from them. That's my analysis there. what's the sudden desperation to go hard there? I think it's there's a few things going on here. One Nation has openly declared it will target his seat. He testified against fellow SAS officer Ben Roberts-Smith during the Victoria Cross recipient's defamation trial, and they have been weaponising that against him. Now, he was called and provided evidence, and he might be called again in the criminal trial now, which means he's in a very wicked position, can I say. You've got to feel for the guy because he can't comment, he can't say anything, but they're using it, aren't they? Like they're not shy about using it and really targeting him in a pretty extreme way. He's had to have beefed up security due to online campaigns against him. And he's previously declared, he said basically, and he talked about it on my show, that this is war with One Nation. He said he would rather get taken out in a box than bend the knee to One Nation. But today he's said he's not worried. This is democracy. And in the end, if this is the end, this is it. Claire, I think this is really interesting, right? The way he's kind of dealing with this and also the One Nation play. What do you reckon?
The thing I found really interesting about his response to this story about One Nation launching a branch in his seat, which in a way is quite processy because if you're planning on having a real crack in a seat, you kind of want a membership base to, you know, get out the volleys, do the how to votes. But when he told News 24, you know, everyone enters politics, they must have a sense of their political mortality. What I found interesting, and maybe this is too nuanced, is that there's a distinction here in even though he's, you know, rearing for the fight, wants to have this big ideological battle with One Nation and, you know, fight for the hearts and souls of the nation, he is resisting that urge that often I think people on all sides of politics, but definitely we've noticed it within One Nation, tend to gravitate toward, which is that this is really unfair. I'm being targeted. People are picking on me. You hear that language a lot from Pauline Hanson. We saw it yesterday in her justification for blocking our media organisation and others from a press conference announcing candidates for the Victorian state election. Whereas he's saying this is the game, you know, this he's actually, you know, it is personal. They're obviously going after him, partly I think because they think it's the kind of seat they can win. But also, obviously, he has become quite totemic as like the last sort of man standing in a way, in some respects, against One Nation. So for him to be pulling that back a little bit, I think there's a level of, I don't know if maturity is exactly the right word, but it's a bit different to that sort of like almost whinging that we sometimes hear from people who feel targeted in politics because, you know, everyone sort of signs up to it. This is the game, right?
Oh, yeah, it is. And, you know, just ask any Labor MP, that's been targeted for a long time in the more progressive so-called parts of Australia by the Greens, you know.
Anthony Albanese.
Tanya Plibersek, like, you know, this is kind of the way it rolls when you are of one side of politics, but there's part of your electorate that wants to go even further of that view, you know, in a particularly right-wing area or a particularly left-wing area, and then someone can out-left or outright you. I think it's interesting, though, you mentioned Pauline Hanson, and we did briefly discuss on yesterday's podcast that she unveiled upper house candidates and the Victorian leader who will contest the lower house seat of Pakenham. As we said, she banned the ABC, The Guardian and The Age from attending, three pretty major news outlets, the ABC being, you know, the public broadcaster that goes free to air.
I think we can probably add SBS to that, although I didn't. They're barred as much as we are up here in Canberra. Yeah. I don't think they even tried to attend.
It's just, it's wild, like the level of control being imposed on scrutiny of them. This is just a press conference. You know, this isn't some exclusive access. But I don't know. I had somebody say to me yesterday, and I want to put this to you. You know, this was just an announcement of some upper house MPs. Yes, this feverish excitement about One Nation because they've been polling so well and Victoria is a real test for how well they'll go. But there was so much excitement and coverage about their reveal, which is just the upper house for crying out loud. It's not even their policies or their lower house candidates. And they ban these big outlets and then they still get a run. Then Pauline Hanson attacks, you know, particularly the ABC, but, you know, when asked questions, she was actually challenged by Chris Kenny from Sky News, no big fan of the ABC, but he did do, I think, a really good job of sort of going, why? Like, why are you doing this? You know? Mm-hmm. And she ends up getting a better run, a bigger run from this kind of anti-establishment, anti-mainstream media thing. I don't know. I feel like sometimes, and I'm sort of really conflicted about this, but I have to say it, kind of plays to her hands, like plays into her narrative, doesn't it? I don't know if anyone was kind of crying about people being excluded from that press conference, but it gave her a bigger run.
Yeah. I too find myself questioning sometimes whether it's all part of the plan. Look, obviously, I'm not a reporter down in Victoria, and once you get, like, sort of as they are, really on the runway toward a state election, things that you wouldn't ordinarily cover suddenly become relevant. But I would say historically, I can't really, I mean, they have campaign launches during the actual campaign, but I can't really think of a major party or other party example of there being feverish coverage of the announcement of candidates.
For the upper house in terms of
and interestingly, though, except for the new Victorian state leader of One Nation, Warren Pickering, who in the press release that was sent out before the announcement was flagged as an upper house candidate, but when asked how he could possibly, you know, potentially, I don't know, form government in Victoria from the upper house, he was like, oh, no, I'm running in Pakenham in the lower house seat. So I kind of wonder what happened there between the press release being drafted. Did they have an alternate leader candidate fall over? I don't know. But that's just an aside. Yes, pretty low stakes announcement. These are the kinds of decisions that the US media had to make in the lead up to 2016 about when to cover and when not to cover then candidate Donald Trump. And when you're fueling that cycle of what that candidate or that person wants and when you're actually presenting the news. And I mean, I'm conflicted, but I do think we probably could have done without covering yesterday's press conference. It's a case by case.
Yes, of course. And there's public interest. They are polling very well. But it is a judgment call, right? Because there's a lot of parties running. And, you have to give it the kind of weight it deserves, or you'd cover the opening of a can, right? Like, you've got to kind of make judgments all the time in news. Anyway, we'll pause on that one. But I just think the way they kind of frame the next couple of months, it really is going to make a big impact, I think, what happens in Victoria, how everyone responds to that story in terms of going into next year, which, can I say, you know, I think yesterday Jacob said it was like 18 months maybe to the next federal election. Guys, just don't want to freak anyone out here, but you can actually get a federal election as early as, I think it's August next year,
don't
isn't it?
Don't do that it's true. To me, PK. I don't want to know. I'm still recovering from last year.
But someone's got to call it, and I'm going to do it. Do you think if things start travelling better, and we don't know, that's the big if, right, at the end of next year, going into that period, that Anthony Albanese, if he's still Prime Minister, and you might think, why are you saying if? Well, you never know. I mean, you know, he might go, oh, I'm going to go out on a high and step down, and, you know. But if he does want to take them to the next election, which at this stage you would assume is his wish, right? Do you think he won't take the opportunity for maybe a November weather's getting warmer election next year? Don't rule it out.
I don't know. I mean, look, I'm conflicted because when we were all jumping at shadows in the lead up to the election in May last year, there was obviously a plan there to go a little earlier than the latest possible kind of date, but there was a cyclone that interrupted that. He got pretty close in the January. I always come back to, if it is Anthony Albanese still leading the party, and I personally believe it will be, he's such an institutionalist. Like, this is the man that wants a referendum to make permanent 4-year terms. He really would have to, it would have to be exceptional circumstances, I think, for him to go substantially earlier. I don't think.
I disagree, I Claire.
I'm happy to have this debate. Yeah,
this man, 4-year terms, his feelings about terms, no. Mm. His feelings are about winning. He will go when he thinks he can win. And if at the end of next year, as I say, I mean, a lot of things have got to line up in terms of Paul Erickson, the National Secretary of the ALP, will go to him and say, hey, I think this is a pathway. If there is good economic data, for instance, right now you wouldn't want to be going to an election, but he would absolutely. Anyway, I'm just saying don't rule out next year because there's all this kind of, it's the start of maybe the year after. Well, not maybe. It'd be the year after. Mm-mm. Nope. Anyway,
can I just add?
Yes.
The only factor I will say in this, which is something that we're not really going to get a sense of until probably at least this time next year. The one thing that One Nation has never had to face before is a fully armed and operational Labor campaigning machine. I do not believe they will get that experience in Victoria. I do not believe they will get that experience in the New South Wales state election in March. But when the federal machine turns its mind to going after One Nation, essentially, on policy and on candidates, on all of these issues, it is going to be a whole new level of scrutiny that they will not know how to deal with. And I think that takes time to establish, which also makes it a bit harder to go early.
Yeah. Okay. Let's watch this space. Watch that space. and it'll be interesting after the ALP conference, where almost every conversation you and I had and on the pod too was that, you know, Labor is framing One Nation as their main opponent. By the way, they can reframe if that changes. Yeah. But if they do see it that way, what does that mean in terms of the framing of their advertisements and, you know, dismantling and going on the attack of framing Hanson's party as being detrimental to workers' rights? The trade union movement will mobilise, particularly on the wages stuff. It will be intense. So, yeah. Okay, just finally, we said yesterday we were going to get into a bit of what's happening with
Bird flu,
yeah, because it is, I don't know, it's just like this kind of impending doom, I feel, I won't lie.
It's the slow march. I'm trying not to think about it, but I'm being forced to think about it.
I think about it all the time. I dream about birds. It's a real, no, I'm obsessed with this story. Like, on a personal level, it's a big thing for me. Yesterday, we briefly mentioned that Australia had experienced its first mass mortality event in South Australia. I say first because you would have to guess there'll be more, right? Murray Watt said Australia had begun a long and difficult journey at that stage. Today was again, he was warning that there will be more mass mortality events.
He said grim news ahead.
Yeah, grim news ahead.
Not good.
Expected to impact mammals. Now, I think birds are very special, but when it does, when it impacts, if it impacts, when and if, mammals, you know, that will be obviously pretty alarming. Like, the images are always don't you think, Claire? Like, I mean, just sort of the pictures tell that story.
I mean, I'm not trying to be unfeeling toward wild animals, and obviously this is potentially hugely devastating to a lot of our endangered threatened species, and I really dread that. But when your environment minister is talking about your pets and being vigilant about your pets, that gets pretty scary and pretty real for a lot of people, I would imagine. Now, I'm going to out myself a little here and say, decidedly not a cat person for the very reason that they are always killing birds. And I can't get around it. I'm also allergic to them. So, you know, they were never going to go well with me. But Murray Watt out there talking about keep your cats away from birds, which you should do all the time, but especially right now. You know, there's been debate about walking your dogs on a leash so that they're not running off and accidentally stumbling into the virus. Like, this is getting pretty real, let alone before you hit poultry, right?
Look, it's And so on poultry, the government's still saying poultry is not affected. They don't want people to freak out and stop buying chickens and eggs. But people obviously are noticing.
And look at the US, what happened there.
That's right, where it's happened in other places, and that's where we see these impacts. And I don't know, just anecdotally, anyone I know in my real life that isn't just a political type person raises this with me more than anything else. So I think people are like, oh, our eggs.
You can't stockpile eggs either. There's no.
You can't. Don't do that. Don't do that.
You'll end up more ill.
Again, just like you've revealed, I do have an adorable cavoodle called Bindi. And Bindi seems so cute and adorable, but Bindi has this kind of like wild element. And if you put her off lead, which we like to do because she deserves a nice time, she will run till she finds a dead bird and go nuts, right? And it's disgusting. And we all lose our minds because she's so cute and fluffy and pretty. And we're like, don't eat that bird. It's below you, you little cute thing.
Come eat your gourmet steak.
Yeah, right? But now I'm like, I want Bindi. I'm really freaking out.
That's what I mean.
I don't mean to be alarmist, but what's going to happen here is it's going to keep being an issue. And obviously at some point we're going to have a conversation. Is there enough being done? On that, just one final comment from me. Yesterday I asked Matt Canavan, he's the leader of the Nationals. You know, you'd think they're into agriculture, right? Like historically these are the things they care about. And so far there isn't a lot of politics in this yet. He keeps saying, look, I'm not just going to criticise the government for the sake of it. You know, it's an international thing. It's come here. We appear to be doing the right thing. That's generally the vibe, isn't it? I'm not seeing a whole lot of politicisation of this. That's good, by the way. Like,
yes.
We don't want politicisation for the sake of it, but at this stage it is very much a bipartisan.
Everyone cooperated on COVID at the start too, and then a few ships arrived.
Good point. That's it for politics now today. Claire, always great to have you on.
Always good to chat. Sorry to all the cat lovers out there.
Oh, well, someone's got to tell the truth. Tomorrow I'll be joined by David Spears for all the latest. If you have a question for us, send it to thepartyroom@abc.net.au and Fran and I will answer it on The Party Room. If you love your cat, give your cat a cuddle. I'm sorry that we both aren't into cats.
See you, Fico.
See ya.